M. Night Shyamalan is best known to moviegoers for his films like The Sixth Sense, Lady in the Water, and The Happening, so you might expect his first book to be about life in the movie business. Instead, he has written about how he got involved in education reform and how we can improve the country's schools. I Got Schooled, the unlikely story of how a moonlighting movie maker learned the five keys to closing America's education gap, is published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it brings M. Night Shyamalan to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
How did this topic grab your attention as a problem to solve?
You know, it kind of creeped up on me, I think. It's been about 5 years writing that book. At first, it wasn't even a book. It was just something that I was interested in. But I was location scouting for one of my movies, actually The Happening, and we were looking for high school. And it was just a specific thing that happened that really moved me. It was we went to a school, a public high school in Philly, and it was an amazing high school. I came in, I got out of the van, walked in, and the halls were beautiful. It was so inviting. And the kids, when they saw me, they came running over, and they were like, oh, my God, you're here. And I'm like, hey, hi, guys. And it was like the teachers were laughing and joking, and they were joking, are you shooting a movie? Can I die? It was really cute. It was really cute stuff. And I had the greatest time, did the whole, you know, saw the classrooms and all that stuff. And then we got in the van and drove for about a few minutes, maybe like 3-4 minutes, to another high school. Got out of the van. This place, immediately something in your stomach told you something was wrong. You walk in, metal detectors, security guards are not looking you in the eye. You get into the hallway. The kids are moving very slowly. They're not looking at anybody. Their heads are down. They never see me because they're not seeing anything. To get into each classroom, I had to have the security and the janitors unlock different keys because every classroom had bars on it. They had shut down the top floor of the school because it had been used too much for sex and drugs, and they couldn't keep track of the kids, so they just shut it down. And the theater was being redone because it had been burnt by somebody, an arsonist. And this was just 3 minutes away. And the difference was so shocking, and wanting to understand what one school was doing correctly and what one wasn't, or what were the factors that were causing these two environments to exist, started a kind of a 5-year kind of thing. And really what ended up happening is me just saying to everybody, what does work and what doesn't work in education, closing the achievement gap between inner city low-income kids and their white suburban counterparts? Like what does work and what doesn't work? And the answers that came back were so varied and so vague. For a novice like me, a tourist, somebody who just wanted to get involved in some way, that I couldn't get a clear answer, it made me want to find the answers.
So now that you have kind of found some of the answers, at least for yourself, what do the schools that are falling behind have in common?
You know, what the thing that I decided to do is have no opinion in this research. I said, you know, one thing I can do is I can use the resources of the foundation. So our foundation, my wife and I have a foundation, supported my travels around the country, all the researchers that were necessary to over the years to gather all this information. So our goal was to just say, what does all the research say? What does it clearly say? Let's analyze it and put it on the table. Are there answers on the table right then and there, the clarity, so that I don't have to stutter when someone asks me about classroom size or school size or tenure or anything? What does the research say? I have no opinion myself. I want to say this is what the research says, if you look at it as a meta study. So what I wanted was just the information so that others could have the information like I have now. And so it was a fascinating thing because the research started over a few years. I started to kind of understand how it all fit into a paradigm. And I could tell you about how that paradigm came to be. But when I thought of how the paradigm worked, I could see how the research all fit together. And once I saw that, then we checked our answers against the schools that were closing the achievement gap. And you saw they were doing those exact things.
Well, you have to explain the paradigm. I always thought it meant 20 cent.
Well, what happened was I was looking at the information, and I was seeing contradictory things in the research. And you know, and some things would say it worked, something worked, and then they would implement it and it wouldn't work, but that's confusing and that kind of thing. So I would just I don't like when the world is random. It's like it bothers me. And I was sitting saying this thing's working like a system. Every school system in the country is working at the same level.
And I'll get to the system in a moment. But you write that increased funding isn't critical to closing the achievement gap. I immediately assumed when you described those two schools that one was in a more affluent area because they're more likely to have all sorts of programs that may be too costly for schools that receive less funding or don't have activist parents organizing fundraising events.
Right, right. That was all my opinion as well. It seems very intuitive. There's a lot of things as I went into the, like, I would put in my list all the things that I intuitively knew were right. And I would say, now let's see if I'm right, you know? One of those was just what you said, that we need to increase the funding everywhere and all of those things. In the research, it's actually not about per pupil spending. After a certain point, you need to have a minimum amount of spending for all children. But past that point, it doesn't affect achievement. And actually, the question isn't about more money. It's where is the money going? So if you in the book, I'll point to a lot of things like higher education degrees for teachers and things like that.
Well, in New York City, I recently participated in an event in which I talked to all of the mayoral candidates. Mm-hmm. Now they're down to just a precious few. But I asked them all about arts funding mm-hmm. in the school system. In New York, most of the schools, 50% of the schools have no music program
Correct.
At all.
And
music
yeah.
teacher, I think it's something like 60 or 70% have no art teachers because the money is, forget about administrative costs, the money is all going toward programs that have to do with doing well on tests.
Mm-mm-mm.
So a little more funding for the would really help in terms of getting things that enrich the kids' lives like the arts.
Absolutely. Now, my book and the research that we did was looking at one thing only, which was to close the achievement gap between inner city kids that are mostly African American and Hispanic and close that gap between them and their white suburban counterparts. So everything that the research looked at was solely about that. It wasn't actually about how to achieve the highest level of education, higher than the white suburban kids are getting right now. What's the most enriched version of a child's education? None of those questions are answered. It's just to get the playing field even was what the book was about.
A lot of people point to charter schools as something of a cure-all for the problems facing our country's educational system. Have they been particularly effective in closing the achievement gap?
Well, it's one of those fascinating things if you have to look at all the information. This is what the information will tell you when you look at it. Is charter schools, when you look at them as a whole, are not doing any better than traditional public schools, and sometimes even a tiny bit less. It's a wash when you look at it as a whole. Now, when you break it down, you'll see because there's no rules on the charter schools, you're going to have a wide swing of effectiveness. So you're going to have really, really bad charter schools that are worse than even the traditional public schools. And then you have the other end where they are closing the gap. So what's interesting is it isn't about charter school versus non-charter school. It's what is the environment that's allowing that top tier of the charter schools to close the achievement gap. And so, for example, if you allow traditional public schools to extend their school day or extend their year into the summer, they would start closing the gap. And in my opinion, they would start beating the average charter school. So it isn't necessary. It doesn't have anything to do with charter schools, but the environment that they allow.
My guest is M. Night Shyamalan. His book, I Got Schooled, is not about going to film school. Subtitled The Unlikely Story of How a Moonlighting Movie Maker Learned the Five Keys to Closing America's Education Gap. You've mentioned one of the five keys, but let's go through the ones that you identify. Retaining the best teachers, promoting instructional leadership, mandatory frequent and collaborative feedback on teaching practice, reducing school size, and adding more school time.
I would be very careful about the wording of each of those five because every time you lean it in one way, it starts to eliminate some nuance that's very, very important. But you're in the ballpark on all five.
But you say that they have to be used as a complete system.
Complete system.
The four is not enough.
Yeah, so this is where the paradigm thing happened. Whereas, you know, 2 years into the research, I was having a hard time seeing all the research working together. How does this all make a picture? And I went to dinner with our friends, Kevin and Sharon, who are both doctors. And Kevin was kind of the head at Penn Hospital in Philadelphia, and he was teaching the residents. And we were having dinner, and he was saying how he teaches his residents that if they tell their patients to do, you know, these five health things, sleep 8 hours a day, exercise 3 times a week, eat a balanced diet, don't smoke, and have a low-stress work environment, that, like, you know, their mental state is important. If they concentrate on these five things, most almost all diseases and getting sick and all that stuff drops dramatically, and it works. Your body is a healthy system, you know? But if you, here's the thing he told them to tell them, but if you don't do one of those things, your chances of getting everything kind of rises back to the baseline. It starts moving back to the norm. And when I heard that paradigm, I was like, oh, that's how a system works. And I went to look and see where there may be false negatives, where, like, for example, if you're exercising all the time, but you're smoking and you drop dead on the treadmill, you'd be like, exercise is bad. That's not the takeaway, right? It's when you want to look at the general population when you're using all five, what happens, right? And so when I looked at the research with that paradigm, I saw the set of things that were working.
But people might be surprised by what's not on the list.
Yes,
we've
definitely
been hearing for years and years that smaller class sizes are the silver bullet for improving education.
Yeah.
And yet you write the reduced school size is a key factor, not class size.
Yeah, no. So here's what the research says. So what's fascinating is there in the world of education reform, there have been three times in my research that I found that the whole system started going the wrong way. There were two false positives and one false negative. And one of the two false positives was classroom size. It was based on the Tennessee study from 1985. And they had dramatic results from lowering classroom size. That has never been duplicated in a study ever. And those findings have actually been subsequently really, you know, looked under a microscope and saw there was other things that were involved and it wasn't very, very accurate, those kind of things.
But smaller class size means that each student gets a bit more attention.
Correct.
From
what
the teacher.
What you're doing is like a confirmation bias. You're saying what must happen, right? So the smaller guy couldn't play basketball as well as the taller guy, right? That's what my assumption was as well. In fact, the very first thing I wrote down was classroom size when I started the research. Here's the reality. Here's what the research says. It has almost no effect. It's very minor. It does have a positive effect. It's very minor. It will not close the achievement gap. So what I'm saying to you, when you need a child to gain two classes in a single year, when three classes to go to grade levels, they have to go that fast, this is not going to help that. And then on top of it, the cost of doing that, reducing the class size, is so enormous. It kills you on all the other fronts, on the teacher front, on the cost front, on everything. And for me, it's the health equivalent. Now, remember we talked about the health things? This would be the equivalent of having a pet. So having a pet increases your life expectancy. It does. It's proven. But it's not one of the essential things to be healthy. And so when we're talking about the triage kind of work that you need to do to get that kid that we need, that inner city kid, that kid that needs that free lunch and all of that, to get and work and achieve at the same level when they graduate and go to college like their white suburban counterparts are doing, this is what you need. You need the triage stuff. We don't need a pet.
Well, you say smaller schools. This is the approach of Mayor Bloomberg and Joel Klein. Mm-hmm. They closed large schools in the city and mm-hmm. broke them into smaller schools. We haven't seen all that much of an improvement.
Correct.
On education levels.
So that would be a false negative, because you can't just not smoke and think you're healthy, right? So this is a system. It has to be done together. And what small schools allows you to do is the other four. See, for example, one of them, let's say, is the principals that principals that spend 80% of their day, 80% of their day on teacher instruction, 80% go in and out of classrooms, constantly talking to their teachers, constantly observing them, constantly telling them how to improve, how to do better, giving them best practices. That's not possible at a certain number, right? That's not possible. So you can see how the small school is by itself. In fact, it would seem like that would be the last of the things to implement. But it's if you implement it first, you're creating the environment possible. You know what it does also? It creates the possibility that you don't have to have a Superman. You know, like Waiting for Superman, that movie? Like, you don't have to wait for some Michael Jordan-like teacher to come to the table. We want the principals to be able to do this all across the country. So that's what that's related to.
Well, one of your keys is retaining the best teachers. Mm-hmm. And that has been the cause of a debate, especially with the
sure.
unions.
Yeah, yeah.
Do the unions have to change their policies?
You know, My
remember the Directors Union, aren't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, you know, this isn't about union or not union. You know, all I want to do is say this is what the research says, and you guys can do whatever you want. You can ignore what the research says, and also I can say to you, this is what the research says, and this is what the schools that are closing the gap are doing, and they are all matching what the research says. So we can close our eyes and pretend those things don't exist, but they do exist. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. A lot of the things that I found in the research support the union position, and a couple things don't. And so that's what you think you would find, right, in the research, that it's some of the things do and some of the things don't. Like, I completely think that the teachers are fighting a Sisyphean task if they don't have longer days and they don't have longer year. So they're constantly losing the battle with the kids, and so it's like a grind against the teachers, and then they don't have the observation and all. There's a lot of things that the teachers need to succeed, and they don't have those things.
And one of the things that you write about early on in the book is that the kids in the failing school, Overbrook, didn't have hope the way that the kids in Masterman, the better school, did. So in the end, is hope what the achievement gap is all about? And you have to give me an answer in 10 seconds.
Oh, no. Actually, no. I think that you have to shout your message stronger than the message they're getting outside that door.
M. Night Shyamalan, his book, I Got Schooled, The Unlikely Story of How a Moonlighting Movie Maker Learned the Five Keys to Closing America's Education Gap, is published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much.